You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Audible proudly celebrates 50 years of hip-hop. Respect the movement. Respect the moment. Celebrate storytellers. Hear new hip-hop titles on Audible free all summer long, including words plus music volumes from Snoop Dogg, Yasin Bey, and Lil' Kim. Ooh, Brooklyn's own. DJ Drama's Gangsta Grills featuring the mixtape legend in conversation with hip-hop greats, including 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne, Wiz Khalifa, Jeezy, T.I., and Pharrell. And binge-worthy Audible original docuseries like The Greatest Day, Can You Dig It?, and The Motherlode. Hear unforgettable hip-hop originals like these and other essential stories on Audible. Listen free. Go to audible.com/GG. And she says she needs more than a friend. That's all I ever been, yeah. Well, one day you gon' overstand. Yo ba do ba di ba boom de. And I remember the first time that I met ya. How could I forget ya? When you smiled and I turned and I said to you, yo, yo, you're pure and true. I'm in love with you, in love with you, in love with you, in love with you. I'm in love with you, in love with you, in love with you, in love with you, yeah. I'm so in love, baby. I don't care what your mama say. I'm so in love, baby. I don't care what the preacher say, no.
I'll leave it there.
Okay. Well.
Praise the Lord, niggas.
Praise the Lord.
You don't know that song?
No idea.
Oh, okay. That is Erykah Badu and Damian Marley.
Okay.
I just in love with you.
Okay. That makes sense.
Oh, Stephen. I'm sorry, Stephen, not Damian, child.
I did not. I mean, it wasn't recognizable immediately. But now that you said that, I feel like I'm following. Yes. Yes.
He said he's really digging me now. I don't know what to say. Yeah, there you go. Yes.
Thank you.
I'm so in love. Oh, praise the Lord, niggas.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. I am a bit under the weather, but I am doing all right. I'm doing all right. No complaints.
Oh, same. My butt hurts still.
I need to ask you this. You're supposed to have had an eventful into last week because you were going to your primary to have the requisite scans. And what's happening? What's going on? Update us, please.
It still hurts, but I did go to the doctor, mm-hmm. and I have a follow-up. I have an appointment. I got a referral to an ortho.
Okay.
So I will be going to the ortho next week.
You still haven't had interesting. An MRI or anything?
No. They said that the ortho will send me for the MRI. I said, okay. So I got muscle relaxers and prescription strength Aleve is what my sister translated for me. You know, she's a nurse. Mm-hmm. Is what they gave me right now. And I have to say, those muscle relaxers, you know.
Are you feeling relaxed?
I only take them at night. I don't want to take them during the day because I have things to do and I don't need that. And you know how I feel about all that anyway. It's not really my zhuzh. But the pain just got to be so irritating that I was like, all right, Western medication, come on in, sugar. You're invited for a little while, but then you've got to go home.
All right.
So I've been taking these. I took the muscle relaxers twice.
Okay.
And I woke up and my back didn't hurt. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like my little pinched nerve and spasms I've been having in my shoulder didn't hurt. I was like, and the leg was not hurting initially. After a while, you know, it starts to kick in.
Are we still using your cane, J Daddy Kane?
I am still using my cane. I'm still J Daddy Kane. Mm. I think maybe this week I might try to move around without the cane.
Well, don't do too much. I don't think you should make any changes until you see the doctor and know what is happening.
I'm ready. I need to work out a little bit. Like, I'm feeling very complacent. I don't like it. I need to go walking.
I understand, but I just don't want you to, without really knowing what we're working with or dealing with, I just wouldn't want you to make anything worse than it already is.
Right, and exacerbate the thing that's already there. I'm going to be responsible. I'm just going to gain 12 pounds in the meantime, but whatever.
Healing is very long work. We know this, right?
I'm going to be like Shataka, laying in the bed, making Frito pies.
No, that's not what you're doing. That's not what you're doing at all.
I'm a mobile. Okay, let me stop.
It's okay. But I'm glad that you are feeling better and we are on the road. It is crazy to me that we have to like so much of our treatment hinges on, you know, the doctors and their timelines.
I know, it's very annoying, and it doesn't make any sense. I'm like, now y'all are telling me don't do these things in the meantime, but then you're like, oh, but we cannot see you for 2 weeks
exactly
now.
It's like, that's not feasible. Like, what? Mm-mm. No. But I'm glad that you're feeling better, and we're going to continue to believe that we are making progress.
We're gonna make progress here, and you know, it still don't stop no show, because you know, when this airs about 2 weeks ago, Kia and myself and Franiqua and Crystal Jean were guests on the very first stop of Dr. Joy's book tour for her new book. What an honor and what a time.
We want to thank Dr. Joy. Dr. Joy has really been a mainstay at the kitchen table. She's been here many times. And I don't know that we've always just really had a great deal of respect for her work. And the way that she's impacting the world. But to really sort of see and be a part of what she's doing with Sisterhood Heals has sort of made it real on a next level for me. So I just want to acknowledge Dr. Joy for being the great gift that she has been to Black women everywhere, for giving us permission and tools and resources for prioritizing ourselves and our health. And with Sisterhood Heals, I think I love what she's doing to really sort of highlight the relationships that we create with one another.
Absolutely.
How community has been such a pivotal piece of the ways that we care for ourselves and care for one another. So shout out to Dr. Joy. I mean, the brilliant, the one, the only Dr. Joy.
Give her flowers. The change in just the viewpoint on therapy in general, over the last, you know, few years, honestly, you know, a lot of our mothers are not willing. I'm not saying your mother is not willing, but a lot of our mothers are not willing to even touch therapy. You know what I'm saying?
And so still working hard
for us to be one generation behind and be advocating for it, and having ones like Dr. Joy to advocate for Black women to fully feel good
yeah.
within ourselves is just, and you know, and to give us permission to do that healing and do that work, I think is just such a beautiful, beautiful place. And she deserves so much just for opening up this space. And I also want to shout out Ashley.
Yes.
Cherry, who Ashley. Was facilitating. She works for Dr. Joy and Therapy for Black Girls and was facilitating everything behind the scenes for the Sisterhood Heals first stop of the tour. And Ashley, we are just really grateful for your diligence in communication, mm-hmm. your clear communication, and just really just handling everything so beautifully and seamlessly behind the scenes. I just think
absolutely
you deserve your flowers as well. So
absolutely.
Shout out Actually, to Dr. Joy. Get your copy of Sisterhood Heals. You are not going to be disappointed.
Period. Do it and do okay. it right now.
Dr. Joy got me together during the panel, okay? Because I had
there
a very
was some live
toxic
action.
Viewpoint.
No.
It was.
There was some live action reframing that happened at the...
It was. It was so loving, too. She asked the question. What
like,
did she say?
Perhaps we should think about that another way.
She's like, okay, I know who I had up here, but I'm going to have to pivot this really quickly. It was during the Q&A. Somebody said, have you ever had to handle... friends who are jealous of your friendships and da da da. And I was like, what? No, we're not lovers. Why are you jealous?
And Dr. Joy was like, stop being
jealousy.
Weird. Okay, wait a second.
Jealousy is actually just an emotion that is saying that you need
an
something else. And
yes.
I said, come
it's
on,
it's an expression
man,
of an unmet need. And I
That's
think,
it.
What a beautiful reframing of that,
it
right?
Was.
Jealousy
it was.
Gets a bad rap, but oftentimes it is just an expression of an unmet need. And a lot of times, if we are honest and admit the times when we feel envy or jealousy, and if we do explore that, it is often connected to one of our own needs not being met. And mm-hmm. so like I was just like, wow, real time
it was
reframing.
And I appreciated it. I don't ever mind a reframe.
No we're all, none of us are
Learn
above correction
me.
Yes, and correction and learning opportunity to sort of think about things from a different viewpoint. So that's that goodness that is Dr. Joy. And
that
shout out
her.
To Ashley and the
she.
Entire Sisterhood Heals team. Y'all go ahead.
Yes,
and get
Cafe
book.
Con Libros, Sisterhood
oh,
Heals,
so
Therapy for Black Girls.
Y'all go in and get that book so we can get Dr. Joy down to the New York Times bestsellers list. If y'all could do
Hello.
That for me.
Hello. Good morning. We
that
must.
Would be
she deserves it.
Wouldn't that be
so,
good?
It's going to happen for her. This is going to be a New York Times bestseller.
I'm
I already
excited.
Know it is.
I'm very
We're
excited.
We're speaking it. So shout out to you, Dr. Joy. Congratulations again. We cannot wait to have you at the kitchen table to talk a little bit more about mm-hmm. Sisterhood Heals. What else did I want to... Oh, before we move into our kitchen table, because we have a phenomenal, timely guest
My
who's
Lord.
Coming through to talk about some very important things that are currently going on in this world. So Twitter, let's talk about this Twitter thing real quick.
Whoa, okay.
Like, what's, so limits, like what's going on? It's going down.
The Twitter is now limiting the amount of tweets that we see per day. And if I think I've seen a few different reports, but I've seen like, you know, most of us who are using the basic free Twitter account that we've been using for the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
If we use that, then we are only able to see maybe 600 tweets per day. And if we exceed that, then we have to wait a full 24 hours before we are able to see tweets again. Now, we can tweet, but if we will not be able to see the flow of Twitter tweets, that is usually our news feeds and timelines, you will get that thing at the top of your screen that many of us have seen throughout the weekend that says rate limit exceeded.
Ah, okay.
And that's based on what I have seen. That's based on the articles and things that I have seen from my very cursory Googleizations of these things, because I've not done a lot of research into what's happening. But from what I understand, Elon Musk is really trying to get us out of here with our comments.
That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know what their reasoning is. I haven't read what the reasoning is behind it. But to me,
I don't know that there has been a reasoning or rationale presented, but
you know, they like to say some bullshit a lot of times and mm-hmm. make up reasons on why something is the way that it is. I was fixing the structure of blah blah blah.
Yeah. Elon Musk announced issues. They are limiting.
They're verified trying to limit accounts. Our communication with yeah. one another.
Verified accounts are limited doing. To reading 10,000 posts a day. Unverified accounts are limited to 1,000 posts a day. That's according to the CBS News. And from what I understand, Elon Musk said that these are temporary, but he tweeted at around 1 p.m. about post reading limits to address extreme levels of data scraping and system manipulation, saying that the following limits have been temporarily applied. Verified accounts are limited to reading. Oh, see, this is what I'm saying. Okay, later in the afternoon, he tweeted the rate limits will be increasing and up the daily limits to 8,000 posts for verified accounts, and they're now 10,000 in 1K. So his announcement came after thousands of Twitter users reported they were unable to use the social media app.
Huh. So yeah, you're trying to limit communication is what you're trying to do. They don't want black people talking to each other. They don't want us sharing information with one another. We all know that Twitter has been a very useful tool for real-time updates about things that have been going on for over the past decade now. And it's not lost on me that this is happening around the time of this Supreme Court rollback of affirmative action, which we're going to talk more about in the kitchen table, and just all of the events of how they are trying to turn this country into 1942 soon. So, and quickly. So, yeah, this just seems like another method of just trying to limit how we share information with one another worldwide.
Well, we are not going silently into the night, though. And if you know, you know. But there are other apps that are hitting the waves. Mm. And those of us who are perusing and getting a feel of the new things that are available to us. And so we will continue to commiserate on our end, but we'll keep our ear to the ground to keep you guys apprised of what the happenings are. But I have had, I'm doing some preliminaries over there.
On did the you new, open? I did you open. Sign up?
I did sign
I
up.
I did as well.
Yes. And so I think we will continue to check that out, and then maybe perhaps we can have some more conversation. I would actually love to get some of the creators of that space here to the kitchen table to talk a little bit more about that.
Oh, but that would be great.
We'll work on that.
And we're not being exclusionary.
We're not. Now. We just want to sort of make sure
gatekeeping.
That we're just covering all of our bases until we are able to share like we really typically do. You know, when we can share, we will. We just really need we just need to sort of work some of the kinks out, get some things going.
That's it.
All right.
That's it. But I am excited for how innovative black people are and how we will always figure out a way to communicate with one another and continue to figure out a way to survive in a society that absolutely loathes us.
Mm.
And with that being said, I think we should head on into this kitchen table talk.
My God, let's do it. It's a very important conversation. You guys get your notebooks and pens and things. There's lots
of
unfortunate things that we will unpack. But again, black people and the workaround, we are working around. Hello.
Always.
Period.
Oh, hello, sister.
What's up, sister?
So have you heard of the app Hinge?
I've heard a few things here and there, but I don't know that much.
Well, it's a dating app, not trying to throw any hints your direction, but howsomever, it's an intentional dating app. You know, we both speak very much about intentionality and all that we do. Do we not? We want to do stuff on purpose.
Right.
And so it's the app that is meant to be deleted.
Okay. Well, I'm good at deleting apps. Yes.
Yeah. You know, you just build a little easy, unique profile. using their feature called Hinge Prompts. And the prompts helps you showcase your personality and share your interests and your humor and your dating intentions.
Okay.
Are you intrigued?
I'm not close. I'm not close. Let's talk through it.
So they have a couple prompts, and I think it would be fun for us to do some of them together. You know, just a little warm up, you know. So,
okay.
Date vibes, like what together we could. The best way to ask me out is by. What's your date vibes looking like?
Have a plan, young man. Have a plan. Yes. I don't like, I feel like I have to make a lot of decisions in my life. I have decision fatigue. So if you make decisions for me, like real, like good ones though, don't be out here choosing chicken fingers and French fries for the table. Cause okay, but we are grown.
And what's the best way for somebody to ask you out?
Just tell me what time to be ready.
Oh, you like somebody to be assertive.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I have decision fatigue. I'm making decisions all day long. Tell me to be dressed at 7 o'clock.
You don't want no hemming and hawing.
Yeah. If I'm telling you that I'm already available on Thursday night and then you say, okay, so what you want to do? I don't got time for that.
That's fair. You want somebody who's going to move with intentionality, which is why Hinge is so amazing.
Absolutely.
Because it's built to move with intentionality.
Absolutely. That particular chapter in your life is closed, but for those of us who are still exploring, it seems that Hinge is the place where that can happen. So if you're looking for a meaningful relationship, download Hinge today and meet someone great, and then delete Hinge when it feels just right.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Welcome back, everyone, to the kitchen table. Yet again, we are here to unpack the horrendous goings-ons of this horrible planet that we call home. And we have a special guest here to help us do that. I'm so excited because, you know, I love to extend the invitation to my friends and colleagues to join Jade and I at the kitchen table, because I am blessed to be a person who has brilliant people around her at all times. I don't know how I got so fortunate, but we are very grateful.
Because you're brilliant.
Today, we thank you. Today, I am very grateful to have my friend and colleague, Dr. Marshall Anthony, joining us to the kitchen table. Welcome, Dr. Anthony. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I am glad that this is an extended weekend.
Yes.
The extended foolishness of last week.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Marshall Anthony is a higher ed scholar. He spent his life, his career, working in the higher ed policy space.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here today because the Supreme Court continues to undo all of our civil liberties as Black and Brown people in this country. And we are here to discuss all that has happened that pertains to the recent Supreme Court decision around affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Anthony is going to help us sort of to parse through what has actually happened, what it means for us, how, and we're going to process this together as a family, and then maybe talk a little bit about, despite this feeling of heaviness that I have, this heaviness and hopelessness and defeat, we still must, we still have responsibilities to do something, to continue to fight on for ourselves and for our future. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. So welcome again, Dr. Anthony.
Yes, blessed be the fruit. May the Lord open all of that.
Well, let's just do the highlights, right? So I think as of Thursday?
Thursday.
June 30th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thursday, June 30th, Supreme Court met and basically determined that the consideration of race in college admission, college university admission, was unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And I believe in direct violation of, is it 14? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I think it is 14. One of those things. Uh-huh. Yes. And so that with that decision, colleges and universities are no longer legally allowed to consider race in the holistic review of college and graduate school applications. And what that means is that, you know, affirmative action laws that were passed years ago, I believe seven states, or is it seven or nine? It's about nine states have had already, at the state level, sort of roll back affirmative action. But with this Supreme Court decision, it is now a national situation. And so, you know, college admissions, talk us from the beginning. Okay, let's talk about the the Bakke case of 1978. How do we get to this place where race was, how do we get to the place of affirmative action? And then we could talk about what's happened more recently.
Yeah, so affirmative action really came in the era of time of like this Great Society type of like all this legislation in the 60s to correct, years and years and years of exclusion of Black folks in just America. And so it came around, President Lyndon Baines Johnson, one of the many, pieces of legislation, policy act that he took was, one of them was affirmative action. And so affirmative action was really meant to rectify just racial disparities historically in higher ed and government contracting. But like you mentioned, it's sort of been under attack since its implementation. And we've seen a series of cases after cases after cases that have really peeled back its effectiveness in many ways. We saw it can't be used as just looking at race alone. Then it got where you just can't use quotas. Then we have it where it has to be a part of holistic review. And so it was at least safe to say that most likely, sometimes it's not the best to go to the Supreme Court because it typically, yes, gets saved, but roll back in many different ways. And so unfortunately, we've seen the ultimate rollback last year, which was a complete overturning of the decision.
Right. Mm. And so to address the systemic elimination and oppression, or Black and brown people have been systemically, we've lacked access to educational opportunity. Affirmative action policies were policies that were enacted by the federal government to try to address some of that systemic exclusion by giving colleges and universities some means of looking at college admissions within the context of race and race relations in this country.
Which is hand in hand. A lot of people don't realize how closely related or parallel that higher ed history moves with American history.
Correct.
I always say the first institution that we know, Harvard, created in 1636, shortly after the first recorded incident of a enslaved person in the what will become U.S. in the United States, 1619. So there's always been this, higher ed has always been this microcosm of larger society. Mm-hmm. It's also important to recognize Black people have always been a part of higher ed, even when we couldn't legally.
Despite
the oppressive, right? We built the institutions. We saved a lot of the institutions. Chattel slavery by selling our people. And so when sometimes people talk about like what's fair and what's right, we never really got a fair shot in these systems and ivory towers that we build with our own hands that unfortunately just kept us out of what they will become.
And so who else did affirmative action benefit outside of just Black people?
So the group that it benefited the most were white women.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
My.
Yes. Mm. Yes. The group that, you know, Becky's with the good or not good hair.
With the thin hair.
It benefited them the most out of it. And so there's also this this myth that we black folks have been the only recipients of it. I would even argue we never even saw the full potential of it in the first place, like other groups have.
And it's interesting that white men are not the only ones who have fought for this to be eradicated.
We got
Clarence Thomas, black ass, and other white women who have benefited and are in the positions that they're in because of affirmative action, who have fought against it.
Yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric that's been out there around affirmative action recently, and even, you know, throughout history. What has been, this is why it's so important. We talk about all the time around the kitchen table about how, like, having access to quality information, being consumers of truth, and, you know, it's so critical, because people love to be out here lying on, you know, how things actually work, right? And so that being said, there's been a lot of conversation from the Asian American community. They have been the most vocal around the ways in which affirmative action has been particularly harmful to them. And I think a lot of that has really been steeped in this notion of this, you know, model minority and all of the anti-blackness that comes, you know, with this distancing from blackness. Right. And so a lot of the Asian American community have deemed last Thursday's decision as a victory, which has been interesting. Marshall, can you tell us a little bit about that history? How we've gotten there? How we've gotten so far from the truth as it pertains to what affirmative action actually is, how it actually functions, and then how people have been using it.
You know, I always say, like, my training has been at the intersection of, I've been trained by a story to ed, sociologist ed, and an economist of education. And so all of those are at interplay. And then my black experience, a black man from the South, where I didn't need any schooling to validate
no theory
any of
that's
my,
correct
you know, personal experience. Right. If not, it's been like, oh, okay, I hope.
Right.
So, like, back to the you know, this notion that higher ed and America have always had this interplay, the unique portion about the racism part is the anti-blackness of it all. And so one thing that can unfortunately, in this country, what gets deemed as patriotic or American, especially even now we're literally having this conversation the weekend of the 4th of July, is anti-blackness. And so sometimes you have communities of color that really want a shot at the American dream, that are coming from situations and countries and circumstances that we can't even imagine. And unfortunately, the narrative is, well, in order for me to assimilate or become, you know, a part of this country, and we can have a whole separate conversation about, you know, immigration rights and the conditions that put people in positions to perform their American identity in a certain way. One of the downsides is, in order for me to fully assimilate, is I have to adopt this anti-black perspective, rhetoric, perceptions around there. And so just historically, we tend to always get the short end of the stick. Black folks do, even more specifically, I say black women, who have a unique, even more unique experience within this country. Along with that, we move to the misinformation campaign about affirmative action, one who is historically benefited, as we just discussed. And two, the concerted effort and ultimately effectiveness this past week that anti-blackness is so ingrained in this country, where you can literally take a few seats. Because that's, I mean, for one, let's be honest. But we can get into the more specifics later, but affirmative action was about race-conscious admissions, particularly at selective or highly rejective institutions, which Black folks are already largely underrepresented in their
largely
research.
I mean, within the low, like, 4 to 6%
yes.
of 100.
Yes.
Like, of 100. So 4 to 6% of 100.
Yes.
Like, even with affirmative action, you know, we've never, like, I'm sorry to cut you off, but just want to jump in here and say brown people have never constituted more than 10% of a population at any of these institutions.
Yes. And
even with affirmative action. So to your point of underrepresentation, the representation still being very marginal.
Yes.
Despite the assistance or the help of affirmative action. Yeah.
And a place in a larger context, Black folks make about 13% of the country. And correct. So we're not, to even have an equitable share, we would still be underrepresented. But it's correct. Not even close to the 13%, right? It's not even close to 10. It's literally within a 2, 4, 6% range. And one of my previous supervisors who passed away, Andrew Nichols, wrote his last seminal piece, Segregation Forever. Through the Education Trust that really talked about that and talked about how even over the past two decades, our representation is becoming has declined even more. And you know, the fact that anti-blackness has shaped a perspective that literally is unfounded is bizarre to me. And then to think about the few that are in, the few of us who are represented at these selective institutions to, let me not get pissed, but like to shape the narrative that they didn't deserve to be there.
Correct.
They don't qualify. Also speaks to the misinformation, because I always say, and I did this work for my dissertation work, a lot of these selective institutions, they're not letting Black folks in just for shits and giggles. Can I say shits and giggles? Like, they're just you have to meet certain merit qualifications to even get in the door. And so we too have to have the same GPA. We too have to have at least an average, median, something with the standardized tests, which are also anti-Black, to even get in the door. And so, It's just bizarre that that perspective had been used. And, you know, they received a bunch of amicus briefs, statistical research that further, you know, found those claims from students from fair admission unfounded. And they still just went with a perspective, all because of misinformation, all because of misconceptions, intentionally largely rooted in anti-Blackness.
There's this notion that diversity sullies the quality of excellence, or like, you know, you cannot have diversity and excellence. They cannot coexist, because to offer Black people seats means that we are lessening the quality, the overall quality of the applicant. And that speaks to this notion that the Black people who were admitted or were admitted via affirmative action were somehow less qualified than their white counterparts.
Oh, yeah.
And that has never been true.
No,
never.
Actually, and we
never
are
been true.
More qualified.
Absolutely.
If you come from a background such as mine, and, you know, Black folks are not a monolith, but systematically, we lack wealth. So to come in with already limited social capital, economic capital, to still be able to meet the merit requirements to get in the school, I would argue that we have a greater, that's why issues sometimes when people talk about resilience, we have an even greater resilience and even greater grit to get our Black asses in the door, when the thing that's really the issue that they should be arguing against, especially that subset of the Asian American community, of the Asian community, it's not all, but that
it's
subset
not all.
Is,
that's true. Yes.
The issue is, like, what you really should be looking at wasn't affirmative action, it's these legacy admissions, it's these standardized testing, it's this merit-based aid, it's these college application fees. That's what's really keeping you back from being in these institutions that you claim are because of Black folks.
All of those remain legal. to this day. Just wanted to point that out. Legacy admissions. Mm-hmm. Legacy admissions at these very selective, highly selective mm-hmm. institutions still remain illegal, very much in fair play. 43% of the students admitted at Harvard are admitted because they are legacy that. Admission.
Mm-hmm. 43%, right? That's
43%.
Crazy.
43%, right? And we're still over here arguing over the 6-8% of black people they don't want to, you know, let in. Black and brown people, we are arguing over those 6-8% while 43% of students. Now, legacy admissions hold more weight than actual, you know, meeting the requirements, because many of these legacy admits, mm-hmm. as the data show, do not or would not have met the admission required standards had it not been for the fact that their fathers and grandfathers attended the institution.
Absolutely not.
And so all of these things we have to sort of, like, you know, let's think about it all. Let's put all of these things into perspective here. And we as black and brown people, we have to arm ourselves with the knowledge and the information that is accurate and true and veritable and verifiable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yeah.
Versus what we hear in the media,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and getting caught up. I got caught up, had to steady myself, right? Almost got caught up going back and forth with that Candace Owens, right?
Oh, gosh.
Who was raising her, of course. Her opinion is down to the shade room, and I just helped the people in the shade room comments to remember that Candace Owens dropped out of the University of Rhode Island. Okay. And attending a university does not make you an expert on admissions or how admissions ought to be run.
Okay.
And so she is not someone that we ought to be listening to.
No.
Her perspectives, her opinions are just that, opinions. Okay. And so
just because she can see both sides of the room at the same time does not mean that she knows all.
No.
That's just that.
No. And instead of coming
she is
for
not at all
action,
qualified, yes,
they mm-hmm. should have been coming for mediocrity in action, right?
Period.
Because that's where the fundamental root is. And even now, I'll be honest with you, like I've seen even some of the coverage when the last Thursday, and since then, like the coverage of it is just not accounting for these contextual issues, and are still
it's not.
My issue is a lot of the hosts or the people that are interviewing folks are not actively pushing back against the misinformation. They're just letting it slide. So if you're saying, if it's like, well, black folks are not getting, like, they're not, they don't qualify. Where's the evidence of that? You know, we qualify over all these metrics, and it's just further pushing this narrative. And unfortunately, it's not a new thing. The communications around affirmative action hasn't been the best. And we saw that even in California in 2020 when they tried to repeal their ban on affirmative action. Once people understood it, and they did see more people like, oh yes, I completely understand it, because unfortunately the folks who are just not fans of affirmative action, they have, and it's not even effective, but they, in a way, they have effectively branded it as being this policy lever that has pushed discrimination, when that's not what it is. And so I think that those who are pro-affirmative action just haven't really found a messaging strategy that is just easy to pick up. And that's just something we see in politics, you know.
Well, yeah, we have to be very careful, because, you know, as is the case with a lot of these policies, or, you know, people want to talk about the policy or they want to talk about the figure without the surrounding context. We could even have this conversation around CRT. Like, people want to just talk about CRT without the larger history and context of what the theory is, what it was created for, how it is to be used.
CRT,
right?
What is that?
Critical race theory.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is what you know, DeSantis got people thinking that children in elementary schools are learning this. And are not.
They're not. They're not at
they
all,
are
actually.
Absolutely
still
not.
An elective.
They are not.
In grad school. Like,
in high, right.
Deep down in grad school. I mean, deep. It's not like, it is not something that, you know, you have to be a very intentioned person. I took a critical race theory class at Columbia.
Yes.
And it was not, you know, it was not no accident. I knew that I was taking a class in critical race theory. I knew what critical race theory was, and I was trying to learn more about its use and application in my particular field. And so I took a course to that effect. So, and you know, without the context of that, people just sort of attach, and now we have all of these people just attaching any discussion of race relations in this country to CRT, and and I don't know how we got there, but we just get so far away from speaking about things in context. We cannot hold anything. Like, if we look at these admission statistics without the proper context, that's how misinformation gets spread. And to your point, Marshall, I think I would like to see more news outlets and people on talking on these news outlets really talking about these things within the historical sociopolitical context of what is happening, what they mean, how we got here. Because without that, you know, this is why you got white women in the PTA meeting saying, stop teaching my child CRT. And it's like, girl, that's not happening.
They're not even teaching BRT. Like, it's not even, like,
there's nothing. Like, what do you, you sound crazy.
They're not teaching it. And then also even how some of the misinformation is presented, affirmative action is often talked about in terms of enrollment, but it's not talked about also in terms of something that I've been advocating behind the scenes is admittance data. So when you apply to college, they get an application rate, right? That's there. And then it's how many actually did the school admit. And then of those admit, there's a thing called yield. How many did you yield? And typically colleges will like over admit, because typically they only get about 50% of the people who will agree to come. And then you get to enrollment.
Oh, they be overselling the seats like the airlines.
Hell yeah. Right, like on the airline.
Literally, that's what it is. And so, but we only have clear, at least data that's disaggregated by race and by gender for enrollment. We can't even see what that admit by race data looks like, or even application by data. You can go to an individual college, but it's not within the, it's not required to be federally reported. And so there is a part of this decision that we, you know, unless we go to every individual school and say, I want to see your application rate by race, I want to see your admit rate by race. I think there are even going to be some nuances that we don't even pick up with what's federally reported. Hence why we've been arguing like for the ed department to release those data points, because some schools collect them, but they're not most likely going to federally report it, because it's, I mean, they can even hold up, you know, the enrollment data already looks a mess in terms of the disparities. And so, you know, my next, you know, my question is also, well, you know, if these institutions care so much about rate, I did find it was slightly interesting, and I can now speak about it now, but I'm like, you know, of the colleges that were in favor of affirmative action, I would challenge them to say, you know, when we look at their enrollment data, it's still a mess. And so I often ask, you know, how, to what extent did you care? Even your enrollment data still falls. It just still has an underrepresentation of Black people there when you compare it to the percentage of Black people that's in the state, which should be something that especially public schools uphold, because public schools get their money from tax dollars.
So I know this is a very new decision, and everybody's just kind of wrapping their heads around it. But to the both of you, what would the next steps be, do you think, in this, in helping children who are trying to enroll and apply, and now they have this looming over, what would the next thing be?
Yeah, so I would say one of the pieces of silver lining is that a lot of people have been having this conversation about what should the next steps be. I released an op-ed about it in last December, talked about like, hey, there are steps that the Biden-Harris administration can take now to combat it. Let's get a hold. One, they, you know, any institution, which are majority of them over 6,000, receive Title IV federal financial aid dollars. And so there are, you know, standards and protocols that they have to adhere to from the education department. And the education department can play a critical role in helping to roll back the, you know, various other measures that anti-blackness or racism has showed in, as we mentioned, standardized tests, merit-based aid, application fees, ending transcript withholdings. So many students are only having to pay, you know, have a $20 parking or library fines and can't get their transcripts. That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Also, don't want people to think like that racism is just only within affirmative action. It's throughout the fabric of the higher ed system. You know, I believe that they should, you know, throw everything at the wall in order to create a system where, you know, we can still have it where it serves, it can better serve Black folks. So that's one thing. Convene a commission of admissions experts, as the key had talked about. And they have mentioned a couple of these things. Luckily, there was a from the education department right after the decision that said we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And I would say, you know, sort of lastly, but most important, what has been absent of the conversation of affirmative action is, you know, minority serving institutions. Luckily, MSIs, historically Black colleges and universities, prioritize the education of Black folks before affirmative action, during affirmative action, and will continue to do so after the fact, right? And I think that, you know, to be able to still have something that we can call our own that is still going to be here to support us, I think is commendable. The downside is these institutions are underfunded. And so just
under-resourced,
and giggles say, if all of incoming Black folks or current Black students decided to go, all of us decided to go to MSIs to be educated, receive a better quality education, which they do for our people, you know, that has to go in tandem with ensuring these institutions get their funding. And we see in several states, including Tennessee, Maryland, luckily, the lawsuit was agreed to be passed. FAMU is suing the state of Florida to get all of these, to get their money back that they have been absent from or underfunded for several decades. And so that has to go hand in hand in order for those institutions to have the equitable resources to support them. If not, we are on the track back pre-1954. We're most likely will have a separate education system that is unequal, that put us in the situation in the first place. And so I am glad that the administration is like putting a call to action and saying, let's invest in these institutions. But it's going to have to take a concerted effort to make sure that happens.
I think a lot of institutions have also been very vocal in releasing lots of different statements and commitments and promises that they will still hold equity, inclusion, diversity a very high value on their campuses. And I think as consumers, as families, as folks who are enrolling or potential enrollees at these institutions, we do have the right to ask the questions that need to be asked.
Absolutely.
And to really ask people to really show me how. Okay, so how, Sway? If you say that you, if you are still committed to serving underserved, historically marginalized populations, admitting those students, if you say those students are still welcome on your campuses, now it's time to really put your money where your mouth is and really demonstrate to these families how you're going to, you know, ensure that their education won't be negatively impacted by this policy change. And we have to, now's the time for us to pay attention. We have to go to campuses to visit, to ask questions, and to really push people on these things, you know, because institutions, even though they, you know, will have limitations as far as, you know, considering race in admissions, you know, there will be other ways in which they can, they will now be forced to demonstrate their commitments to DEI on their campuses. And it's okay for us to ask people, okay, okay, so how y'all gonna do that? And it's more than okay. It's actually required. We actually must do that, because to Marshall's point, unfortunately, our MSIs are not resourced to educate all of our students. And so many of our students will still be forced to attend predominantly white institutions. That will be the only options that they will have as far as their post-secondary education. Mm-hmm. And as such, you know, we have got to really work to see what other things can be put in place to support these students and families. But all of these things still matter. Ask questions. We still have to find our ways to vote. Elections matter.
Especially now.
I mean, we see all the way up, you know, how this has implications, you know, nationally with, you know, Supreme Court seats and all of that. But even locally, thinking about how money is spent, how these, you know, who determines, who makes these determinations about funding at the local level. These are the kinds of questions that we need to be asking of ourselves as far as our local government is concerned as well, because it really does make a difference.
And for the white allies or any allies that are non-black with funding that want to donate their funding to HBCUs, and we can talk about HBCUs specifically considering the context of this conversation, make those funds unrestricted so those schools can do what they need. They know how to best serve their students. And so a lot of times we get the headlines, but we won't see how the funds are classified and to talk about like why it's important. You know, HBCUs have a cumulative endowment of about $2 billion, while more than 50 predominantly white institutions on their own have more in endowment funds, right? And so
then all 107 HBCUs put together.
It's just wild. And so donate your money, but trust that the institutional leaders who are experts in this know how to use the funds, and to the institutional leaders too. Like, ensure that you're using those funds to best serve the myriad of students who are there. We also know in the literature that not everyone has the same experience, even amongst our own community, whether that be HBCU, Black Church, you know, and so ensure that there are resources that support students' holistic needs, because clearly, if we don't do it, then who? And so it is a matter of, you know, literal, like, this is the way that this is our only option, is to make sure we're great at the home front. Because if not, then I am even more deeply concerned about what our completion, attainment, retention, like all of the, and then ultimately our wages, and like, which we are already
quality of life,
because of structural racism puts us behind. And so my fear is that they're going to be, you know, either we're going to widen the racial wealth gap, the gendered racial wealth gap. And so it's really up to the
institution. I'm glad you said that.
The work to make it happen.
I'm glad you said that, because, you know, this is my little soapbox that I stay on around here and getting grown. It's just, you know, we love scholarships, right? We love to give the babies money, but we have to remember that we are often writing checks to send students to institutions that are falling down. And so I want to thank you for saying how important, you know, that unrestricted funds. I would love, you know, and I'm not saying that to stop giving the children scholarships, because we absolutely do need to support our students. But we need to be supporting our institutions in like manner. Mm-hmm. And scholarship monies only go as far as they go, right? But if we are to complement some of those investments of scholarships for students with some investments into the institutional capacity of these minority-serving institutions, then and only then will we have the leverage to really make a difference and to really try to address this gap.
And can because, I also mention, you know, a very
please.
Something to my fellow Black folks that went to predominantly white institutions for, you know, it's a range of reasons why we have decided to go. It is perfectly okay to give your Black dollars back to an HBCU.
Better than
a lot of the schools,
more than okay,
that
necessary.
Many of us have went to that are predominantly white. They are self sustaining. And so it is not bizarre. It is not weird. Give your back money to invest in the institutions that we all have a HBCU connection, whether we like it or not. I mean, HBCU
absolutely
in the fabric of Black social and economic mobility have been at the root of that. And so give that money back and don't feel no ways tired. I know a lot of us tend to like make it specifically for if we give to the predominantly white institution, we will restrict those funds to a certain program. Mm-hmm. But also make sure, especially considering a lot of these anti-diversity, equity and inclusion policies, what's going to happen if your institute, if your alma mater is in a state that's literally disbanding the program that one or two programs that you were giving to. I think, again, this is another perfect example where it's okay, bet, let me give it over here. And so, you know, the likelihood, there's a greater likelihood that your dollars will go directly to the needs of Black students. And so I'm a champion of that.
I love that you said that. Absolutely.
Thank you, Marshall. We have only this has been a really comprehensive conversation. We would love to continue it, but you know, I think you've given us sort of the what we need to know of what's happening right now, how we can really understand and make sense of what this all means. Mm-hmm. Just bear in mind that, you know, it's the elimination of the consideration of race and admissions is not just like, oh, these are Black people, we are letting them into our institution right now. It's basically saying we cannot consider the fact, the ways in which race has been a determining factor in their lives. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they have not had access to certain opportunities or the same opportunities as their counterparts because of their race, that's what colleges are not able to consider in admissions. So let's be conscious consumers of information. Let us continue to ask questions of people who we know have the right answer, and take everything with a grain of salt. Is there anything you want to leave our listening audience with as we sort of think about how we move forward from here?
Yeah, I would honestly say off that point, because I know a lot of the discussion, especially in mainstream news or consumption, is on race blind and race neutral approaches. Those approaches, researchers have studied them. Those approaches do not guarantee racial diversity. And they actually ignore systemic barriers that, you know, prospective students of color can breach. You know, we hear, what about income? What about zip code? What about the best proxy for race is race itself. And we have evidence that including in those states with bans on affirmative action, the enrollment of Black and Latinx students at publicly funded flagships decline. They decrease. It inhibit their economic mobility. And so, however we can do it within the confines of legality, race must be centered. And I think if we're in a content creator culture now, I think it's we can lean on the zeitgeist of the moment and find really innovative strategies to still center race in college admissions.
I love that.
Yes, thank you.
We will link your op-ed and other resources in the description box so that if folks want to sort of walk away from this conversation with some resources that they can use to continue to inform their future steps, trajectories, work in this area, we will do that. You're always welcome to come back. Thank you for sharing all of you and your work on this platform. We really appreciate you, and we have to continue to find our way to fight and move forward despite the conditions. I think one of the things that we do well, particularly well, it's our superpower as Black people, is we move around.
You know,
they cut us off at one way and we move around. We will not be deterred.
No.
We will continue to do what it is that we've set out to do. We got to Underground Railroad our way right on out of this.
Sure we will. And save the country from itself yet again.
Absolutely.
And again.
Because that's
again.
What we continue to do.
I do want y'all to know that when Clarence Thomas kicks it, I'm going to host a block party. And I just want everybody to know that. Everybody's welcome. Hot links galore, chicken wings, potato salad. It's going to be a celebration.
I will be there.
Yes.
Same. And I will bring the devil egg. Thank you. Thank you all.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Marshall. We appreciate you. Let the people know where they can find and follow you if you'd like.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of the podcast and the work that y'all are doing to really just get information out to the people in the community. And I think at a time like this, and for the years that you all have been doing this, I applaud you for it. And it's truly innovative in this approach. But yes, please follow me on, you can find me on Twitter at MC Anthony JR, MC Anthony JR. I'm there on Twitter. I'm also on LinkedIn. You can just type in my name, Marshall Anthony Jr. there. And follow me and I'll follow right back. So thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you. Thank friend. You.
Thank you, Dr. Marshall. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Audible proudly celebrates 50 years of hip hop, 50 years of culture that birthed the most prolific storytellers of our time. Respect the movement, respect the moment, and celebrate the storytellers. Hear brand new hip hop memoirs, podcasts, and exclusive musical performances on Audible free all summer long. Like new volumes from Audible's groundbreaking Words Plus Music series, including Snoop Dogg's From the Streets to the Suites, Yasin Bey's A Dynamic Career in Communications, and Lil' Kim's The Audacity of Lil' Kim. DJ Drama's Gangsta Grills, featuring the mixtape legend in conversation with hip-hop greats like 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne, Wiz Khalifa, Jeezy, T.I., and Pharrell. Binge-worthy Audible original series like The Greatest Day that takes listeners inside the making of hip-hop's greatest photograph. XXL Magazine's iconic 1998 cover that saw over 100 of the day's greatest hip-hop artists assembled for one legendary image. Ooh, let me tell you, kids, what a time. Chuck D's Can You Dig It?, about a gang peace treaty in the Bronx, set the stage for the rise of hip-hop culture. Or The Motherlode, featuring hip-hop heavies like MC Lyte, Angie Martinez, retracing the history and future of hip-hop through the lens of its most influential female contributors. Hear unforgettable hip-hop originals like these and more essential stories on Audible. Listen free. Go to audible.com/GG. That's audible.com/GG.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
All right. I mean, a juicy kitchen table for your nerves. We're going Ooh. To close out this conversation in this episode with our last few graduation announcements. We just have a couple to get through here. And so Jade and I are going to jump in and finish these out. And then we'll
some
close.
Positivity behind yes. all the negativity.
This
happening.
Is what we need. This is how we are pivoting to sort of to get us back in the way of speaking love and light. All right, so let's move. We have an announcement from Shanta. And this is, this reads, hello to my beautiful cousins, Jade and Kia. I'm writing to congratulate my daughter, Sarah Sullivan, for accomplishing her high school diploma from Venus High in Los Angeles. I'm grateful for her. I love her and I wish her continued success on her future endeavors. And that's from her mom, Shanta. So thank you, Shanta, for writing in. And thank congratulations you, to young Sarah Sullivan of Venus
Come
High
on,
School.
Come on, Sarah.
Yes.
Congratulations, boo.
I love this
We
for
are
us.
Wishing you very well in your next steps of your life.
Absolutely.
Our next one comes from Zalika.
Hey.
And she says, hello, cousins, Dr. Praise the Lord, niggas. Hello, cousins, Dr. Takiya and Chef Jade. Let me start by saying, though, I may not know you both personally. You feel like family. So you're family in my head. And All I right. love you both. Oh, we love you back. Sending this graduation shout out for my beautiful goddaughter, Miss Shanice Randolph Corbin, my Tootsie Roll.
That's it.
On May 18th, she said Tootie Roll, but I'm going to assume that's Tootsie Roll. On May 18th, 2023, she graduated from Suffolk Community College with her associate's degree in culinary arts restaurant management. To say I am proud of her is an understatement. The last couple of years, she's dealt with a lot of obstacles, including attacks to her health, but she pushed through and succeeded. I know she will continue to do amazing things. Thanks for always celebrating the graduates from the godmother of now, Chef Shanice. Yes. Come on, Shanice. Congratulations. And Zalika, thank you so much for writing in.
And thank you for the pictures.
Yeah. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me see. Oh, yes. Come on, Chef Shanice.
Chef Shanice.
You better contour.
You look amazing. You look amazing.
Yes, you do.
And our next announcement reads, hi, Chef Jade and Dr. Kia. Love this podcast. And this is my first graduation shout out. I absolutely love this tradition. Happy to join in. I've been waiting for this. My name is Amara. I would like to shout out my nephew, Lumiere, who graduated from pre-K this June. As his Haitian father intended with his name, Lumiere has brought such a light into our family's life. As a young Black boy, I love watching how joyous you are and how authentically you enjoy life. Shout out to my sister who is gently parenting him despite how much he pushes her buttons. I am actively watching her undo our own generational family trauma and heal herself through her parenting. Shout out to my brother-in-law who ensured that there was zero wrinkle regalia. Lumiere was the freshest four-year-old with the Merlot three-piece suit. Go ahead.
Come on, Merlot.
Here's a picture so y'all can not only see the level of detail, but the personality of my amazing nephew. Love you so much, Lumiere. From your TT, keep shining, boo. Oh, yay.
Look at Lumiere. Look at these shades. And
first of all,
pose on them, Lumiere. Giving, pose on them.
I mean, it's the accessories for me, okay? It's it, giving.
It's everything.
It's looks. It is looks, okay? Lumiere.
Yo, Lumiere, don't ever let nobody call you nothing else.
Period.
Okay.
I love
don't
this
let
for
them shorten
all of
it.
Us.
Don't know net like Lumiere. That's it. Okay. Period. No I last name. I love it. I love this so much. All right. Next up, it says, Dear Dr. Kia and Chef Jade, I am very proud to shout out my damn self
I know that's
for
right.
graduating with honors from the Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences with a bachelor's in law. It took me a long time, including a few heartbreaks and a depression, to get here, but I got it. I will follow up this degree with a master's in law, and I'll eventually go on to become a judge. Black judges are rare in the Netherlands. Come on.
Yes.
I want to thank myself for not giving up and keeping my eyes on the prize. Furthermore, I'd like to thank my friends and my family for their undying support, and I'd really like to thank you two and the Reed for getting me through it when I thought I wouldn't make it. You lift up Black people by being yourselves, and that's what I needed a lot of times, to be lifted. I hope to shout out myself again in the future. In the meantime, please never stop doing what you're doing. P.S. Chef Jade, you mentioned on the show we didn't have good food here in the Netherlands, and I personally think you only went for the Dutch white food. Actually didn't. You did mention you love Sirtabi, so hit me up the next time you visit, and I'll show you and get some bomb food
that's
in Amsterdam.
It.
I appreciate
all
that.
All we need is a connect.
Much love and appreciation, and that's from Geraldo. No, Waldo Faldo. I love it. Congratulations, Geraldo.
Yes, congratulations.
And we can't wait to hear about Judge Geraldo.
I know that's right. Hi, Chef Jade and Dr. Kia. I want to send a graduation shout out to my baby sister, Sydney McNeil. She graduated summa cum laude from Rowan University. She was able to do this despite ending her senior year in high school on a truly awful note due to the panorama. She missed her senior trip, her senior prom, and a proper high school graduation, and all of the fun end of the year events. She missed all of that only to start college with the same circumstances and missed out on the true college experience. Still, she persevered, and I couldn't be more proud. Love you, Sydney. And that's from Aaron. Thank you for sending this, Aaron. Shout out to you, Sydney. And thank you. You know, I'm proud of you too, girl, because what an ashy way to start in your career, college career. But you did it and you did what needed to be done. And here you are in your regalia. I hope you are as proud of you as we are of you. Shout out to you, Sydney. Come on here.
Shout out to you, boo. All right.
Next up, good evening, Chef Jade and Dr. Kia. Greetings. I hope I'm not too late. You're not. But I would love to congratulate my baby girl, Miss Cassidy Andrea Francine McDonald, on graduating from pre-K. She has tested into kindergarten early and is reading, writing, and doing simple math. I'm so proud of my little diva, and I know she will be someone great. I can't wait to see what life has in store for her. Love her proud mommy, Soraya. Look at her. She's four. She says she's a tall four-year-old.
I know, that's
she's
right.
She's adorable. Team tall is what she is.
Tall supremacy out here.
Is this a helicopter? What's this? The Barbie? What's this?
Chow.
This is the Barbie helicopter.
I mean, it's very intense.
Go ahead, Miss Cassidy Andrea Francine McDonald. Do amazing things, baby girl.
Very proud of you, girl.
Super cute.
All right. The next email is actually not an announcement, but a question. And so we will continue on to the announcement, which reads, me finally graduated, y'all. Thank you for sending the pics. Hi, Jade and Kia. Y'all don't understand how grateful to the heavens I am that I found your podcast 2 years ago. I needed a safe space to remove my mask, and your podcasts have done just that. So thank you. I'm Jamaican born and raised and moved to Chicago at 17 years old by myself to pursue higher education. Let's just say the first 2 years living here didn't count as my mental health. And my current environment was that of a 2000s Madea movie. Oh, Jesus. Anyways, I have finally graduated from DePaul University with a bachelor's in business management and has successfully landed an okay paying tech role right out of school. This is a long time coming, as the devil did try hard to keep me down, but the Lord said, stop. And I'm grateful. I'm living in a space of gratefulness, and I love you ladies so much. I love the safe place that is your kitchen table, and I wish you both enormous peace and blessings for your future. Thank you for giving me the space to feel celebrated. And that is from Maddie Kalu. Thank you, Maddie.
Come on, Maddie.
You look amazing in your graduation flick. Okay. And congratulations to you.
The boobs are sitting.
I mean,
the legs are glistening.
The skin is skinning.
You look amazing.
Okay, it's given.
Big up yourself.
Absolutely. We love it, and we love you.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for sending in your graduation announcements. The next minisode will be on will be made available super soon, but it's already available down to Patreon, so make sure that you're checking that out if you are a member of our select and special community there.
Oh, hello. Come join us.
These are the last.
This is our last of the graduation announcements for this season. So shout out to all of the 2022 and 2023 grads. We are super, super, super proud of you. And as Kia and I continue to expand, we are still trying to find ways where we can celebrate with you all a little different. But we're going to keep these graduation announcements going as long as we're here, because everybody deserves to be celebrated. So, yes, from getting grown, we love you all. Congratulations.
No, no,
and
right.
We're going to close this out with a little petty peeve, are we, sis?
Let's do it.
And I want to be very responsible of the things I say to my sister, because everybody know I can be real petty. P-E to the T-T-Y, honey.
It's time for the petty peeves. And I don't know if you've seen, I feel like the Times might have done something on it, the gnats this year.
I've heard. They're also here.
They're so bad.
I don't know what vermin or pestilence.
Pestilence, okay? Because clearly we are living in the Times. Mm. Like, what do I need to do? Smear some lamb's blood on my door? Like, get this shit out of here. I'm over it. And so I've been putting little teeny cups of like vinegar and Dawn dish soap so that it catches them, you know? So when they fly in, it's like, nigga, you dead. But they are out of control this year. That is, it's not an exaggeration. I don't even have any fruit out.
No,
I don't have no fruit out. I clean, like, I don't let Trill's food sit out like that. Like, it's just, it's bad this year. And I'm like, between that and the haze, we haven't had a proper summer, and it's July now.
The haze,
man.
The haze.
Oh,
it's intense.
I was like, this every year for the past.
It's intense.
4 years now. Niggas are living very just, I don't know, the side of the times. That's all I can think to myself. I don't know what the hell is happening, but it's awful. And we need a revolution.
Yes.
Ooh. What's your petty peeve?
My petty peeve, I don't really know. I think what is top of mind for me is, you know, on the heels of our last conversation about like self-acceptance and accepting that our bodies are changing. I am very much in a place where I'm being sort of tested in that regard, right? Because when I see, like, you know, I feel like consciously I see that I am, you know, training, I'm working out, I'm trying to be diligent, trying to be consistent. And like we said last week, you know, the body responds as it wants to, not like it used to. And sometimes I get very discouraged. Like, you know, I look at footage, pictures, you know, and, you know, and I still get very much in my feelings because it feels like it's not working. But I just have to sort of work through all of my mental hurdle around, you know, so I guess I want to find a way to be at ease and content with who I am and the way that my body is bodying right now and try to find space to be grateful. But sometimes, you know, like I see myself sitting in that chair and I'm like, wow, I still look big as L. And I just have to sort of work through. I have to work through. And this is just me being honest that my petty peeve right now is that I am struggling internally with, you know, just the image stuff that I, you know, the work that I'm, and I feel like I'm trying to make progress. And sometimes I do feel like I am making progress, but it's just not one of those days where I'm feeling progressive.
No, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I mean, listen, body, there's body dysmorphia, there's body, you know, body challenge with body acceptance and shifts and changes. And when you're used to being a certain way and you realize you're probably never going to be that way again, that's another kind of settling that you have to do. And it just be like that sometimes. I mean, I think that's just the long and the short. Be like that sometimes.
Yeah, man.
You know, sometimes it's for a week, sometimes it's for a little period. Mm-hmm. But you can fall into it. Take a day, eat you some rice cakes, sit on the couch, watch TV. And then the next day you'll celebrate the fact that your body can do all that gym shit that you be doing.
Yes, that's what I will do. But I just want to be honest. And for those of us who maybe, you know, every day is not going to be an amazing day. Every day is not, you're not going to feel like you are, you know, doing it, doing the damn thing every day. You're not going to feel like that every day, but you have to find a way to continue to show up and push through. But also, like you said, sis, create space to allow those feelings, to honor those feelings and accept that that's what you feel. But not sort of let the feelings subsume you. So that's where I am. And if that's where you are, know that you are not in it by yourself. Okay.
No.
Sometimes.
Because I told you, I'm feeling very sedentary with this fucking leg. I mean, even though I'm doing shit still, I still feel like I can't do what I want. Yeah. And you're right. I just got to, in order not to make this shit more irritated, I just have to let it be until we know what's what. And if that means that I gain 7 pounds in the interim, then so the fuck what?
You'll lose it back.
Yeah, it's fine.
You'll lose it back.
I ain't never, you know, it's not like it's like I be in the gym.
All is well.
It's not like I be there. All is well. I be outside frolicking, though, and I'm mad that this has stopped my frolics.
Well, the air quality is terrible.
The air quality is all. Do you know we went to the water park the other day? Okay, you know what? Petty peeve part two.
Okay.
We went to the water park the other day because we're trying to give multiple days to Noah of celebration, mini celebrations for her 10th birthday.
I mean, the big 1-0. It's given double digits. A decade
of Noah.
How are you feeling about that, sis? What is that? How does that feel?
I've had some challenging moments.
Really? Tell me what is challenging?
Well, just sometimes looking at her and being like, damn, you're never going to be little again. And you were just little. It's so crazy.
Just like, very small.
And then Tristan's ass is going to tell me that he was like, in 5 years, she's going to be 15. And I was like, please, shut the fuck up.
I need to lay down. I need to lay down.
Like, let's focus on right now and right now. I can't.
Oh, my God.
In five years.
15. I can't.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what? In all honesty, too, it has it like kind of puts mortality in your face more so, you know, where you be like, this nigga grows rapidly, which means I grow rapidly. Which means
what, like, is happening
in 10 years? You'll be this.
Yeah.
In 10 years, I'll be that.
My God.
And, you know, listen, that's a whole nother conversation. But also, you know, it's also awesome to be able to be like, I have kept you breathing.
What a blessing.
And fed.
Yes.
And
like,
you know. Because when I remember when she was a baby before she started talking, I remember having a moment being like, what's it going to be like when you start talking? Mm. Maybe it was my high mind, but I'm like, how do you learn English? You're going to learn it through us. How do you learn like conversation skills? You're going to have to pick that up through us, right? At the crib and like at school and shit, of course. But as a baby, that's where you learn language and learn how to communicate. And I would think that to myself when she was a baby, like, that's so crazy how you all like just develop into these little people. And so now as she's 10 and just having these conversations and saying shit to me like, mujer, please.
Mujer, please.
It's just, you know, you just have these moments where you reflect and be like, there was a time when you didn't talk.
Yeah.
And now you talk too damn much. And that's because you learned from us.
Wow.
And it's just so, you know, it's maybe I'm high right now. I don't know. I usually am. But but it's pretty awesome that we have kept her, you know, alive, and that she's like, you know, just growing into her own person. And it's really awesome to see those personality traits continue to just like pop up like flowers. Mm. And I can't wait to see what else she does, but also like not too quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. That was
what a beautiful in a nutshell
of Noah turning 10. And
Noah how it's
fucked
10.
With me. And then, of course, you know, you have everybody else, because as much as we tell people stay out of people's uteruses, they don't. So, of course, there's also the thoughts of people like, she's 10 and y'all still talking about like, are you going to? I'm like, please, please, please,
mind
please,
your business, please,
please, please, please. So, so that's another conversation. Mm. But yeah. But that's this episode of Getting Grown. Thank you all so much. Thank you to Dr. Marshall for coming through and really explaining what affirmative action is. And
yeah.
I love when you bring the academics to the table, because it allows me to sit in these conversations that, you know, y'all be having that
impact
never,
you
ever,
as a parent, you know. Right? Because
exactly,
like we're talking,
you know,
about, you know, it won't be long before Noah starts to make her decisions as what she wants to do after her secondary education. And it's important for us to sort of be armed with all of the truth of what is actually happening versus
exactly
what the media will have us to believe about.
Exactly. Because the one question I wanted to ask you all, but I said I'm going to save this for when Dr. Marshall comes back, because I know that we're going to host a series of conversations, especially given everything that's going on, is, you know, what kind of questions for a parent like me who have to go through this process with my child and is not privy to all of the ins and outs of the higher education space, what kind of questions do we need to be asking in these processes? So I think to continue these conversations where they are impactful, because they mean something to all of us, right? Whether it be your godchildren, your nieces, your nephews, your own, whatever the case is, this is our future. So we need to know how to handle it with our children. And I appreciate the spaces y'all are in to do that.
We are definitely, thank you. We are definitely going to have more conversation, because I mean, the more that I think about this and we think about what's important and what's necessary as far as sort of arming ourselves with accurate information. Mm-hmm. I think we just need to go back to the basics and do like sort of a walking through. I think there's so many people that don't understand all that goes into admissions decisions on a college campus. Mm-hmm. All of the things that a college considers when determining who gets access and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so why it's important for us to think about that, and why it's important for you as a parent to go in asking the right questions. What are the ways that this institution thinks about that so that we can make the decisions that we need to around whether or not to apply and what our application materials need to look like?
Absolutely.
If this is the place we want it. So we're going to do that. We're going to do an unpacking and sort of one-on-one all that we need to know about student debt, because student debt mm-hmm. continues to be a pervasive problem for those of us who are borrowers and those of us who are, mm-hmm. you know, entering the post-secondary ed space and thinking about our options. Mm-hmm. It's also important for us to talk about it from that angle as well. So we're going to have more conversations into the fall about this because... You know, it is my desire to continue to make scholarship accessible. Scholarship is not limited to the ivory tower. It's not limited to the publishable spaces where academics conventionally have discourse. But there needs to be conversation and connection to the community. And that's one of the things mm-hmm. that I've really worked very hard to make sure that Getting Grown does. So.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
I appreciate that. Stay tuned for these conversations. And listen, y'all know I be here to ask the questions mm-hmm. for the niggas who don't even understand what's being said.
No.
This is a community team effort
for
us all to be educated. And we're grateful for the Black people in these academic spaces who do this work so that they can bring it back to the community. That's what we're supposed to be doing in all aspects. So... that is it. Thank you, Dr. Marshall. And thank all of you. Make sure you hit up the Patreon if you'd like to get the video version, ad-free versions of all of this. Yeah. Pre-shows and so much more. And sis, take them out. Tell them what to do.
Make sure that you are moisturizing your insides by attending to the business that is yours and yours alone. You also want to moisturize mm-hmm. your internal organs by drinking as much water as your body can sustain. And then you also want to moisturize your largest external organ, that being your skin. Why, sis? Mm-hmm.
Because you're Black, will crow's freaked if it's dry.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Don't say we crow's didn't tell
freaked.
You.
What's a freaked?
Crow's freaked.
Or freaked.
Bye, y'all.
Okay, bye.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.